You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast. Hope you're enjoying listening to the podcast. If you are enjoying, I hope you'll do two things for me. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and I also hope you'll rate the podcast. Those two things help us get noticed by more folks on the various platforms. And a cool new feature that we just folded into the podcast now, on your Alexa device, if you've got a special skill enabled, you can just turn to your Alexa device and say, Alexa, play the Miles to Go podcast, which, you know, I think is pretty darn cool. At any rate, this week I wanted to make sure that we got in something that was a good entry-level segment for families. And so there are a few new credit cards out there, and one of them is the new Hyatt credit card, or more correctly, the World of Hyatt credit card. And I wanted to break down the offer in a way that helps a family understand what this credit card sign-up bonus can do for them. And then from there, what the card might help them do over the course of, say, a year's worth of travel before they have to pay the annual fee again. And my buddy Summer from Mommy Points, I think, does a great job trying to translate what this can mean for your family. So I brought Summer back on to talk through this with us so we could figure out what it is your family can get out of the new World of Hyatt credit card. Hey, Summer, thanks for hopping back on with us.
Thanks, Ed. And Hyatt is one of my absolutely favorite hotel loyalty programs out there because there is so much you can do with these points. And their properties are just amazing for families. They have a really great lineup, especially domestically in the U.S., if you are looking to use your points for a really crazy, awesome family vacation.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm definitely a Hyatt guy myself. I do think they line up very well for families in terms of taking vacations. I know it can be a bit harder to qualify for elite status with Hyatt than it can be with some of the other chains, just based on how many hotels they have. But I do think that they did a really good job repackaging the credit card, or the second credit card, if you will, is World of Hyatt, such that even families without elite status, I think, can get a decent amount out of signing up for the card and potentially even putting some spending on the card if they have some stays. So let's dive into it. I think one of the interesting things for me in the credit card world was that this card actually now offers you the ability to earn elite status credit or earn nights towards elite status if you're spending on the card.
Yeah, which is really, really cool, especially if you have some actual real paid travel, or with Hyatt, you even earn elite status if you're using points these days. But if you've already got some of those that you're going to have access to and you can stack it with earning extra elite credits with this card, then elite status is going to come into range much, much faster. And maybe that still doesn't get you to the top tier globalist status, which will require 60 nights a year. But maybe it'll get you to the second tier explorist status. I did not name these things. but maybe it'll get you to that, which can still be really valuable for families because it'll give you 4 awards a year with lounge access. Now, not every Hyatt property has lounge access. In fact, some of my favorites don't. But a lot of the resorts do, especially if you're looking at the Hyatt Regency brand or even the Grand Hyatt brand. And if you have your lounge access at those resorts, then you can save $100 a day on food costs for a family by loading up on breakfast, snacks, and maybe even a light dinner some of your nights. So with this card, you're going to get 5, I believe, nights just by having the card every
yep.
year.
Yep.
And then you will get 2 more for every $5,000 you spend on the card.
Yeah.
So again, maybe you're not putting $1 million on the card a year, but even if you're spending, say, $15,000 in a year, because that's the magic number to earn an extra category 1 through 4 award. You're going to get 1 automatically each year by having the card, but you can earn a second if you put $15,000 on it in a card member year. So when you got the card to when it renews and you pay that fee again. So if you did that, even just to hit that threshold, you're earning 2 for every $5,000. So that would mean you're earning 6. You already have 5 by having the card. So now you're at 11. Without doing anything. And I think 30 is the magic number for explorists. Can you double check me on that, Ed?
Yeah, and I think also, too, as we're talking about status levels, I think one of the things that I love about the way that they designed the new card is you know, so let's break this down to manageable components. The card itself costs $95 per year. And so I don't want to use words like free travel because it's not technically free. So let's think of this as, for families, let's think of this as prepaid travel. So if you can spend $15,000 on the Hyatt card each year, so what you'll end up having there is for the $95 annual fee, you'll end up with two free nights in, as Summer mentioned, up to a Category 4 hotel. Well, so what does that mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things? You know, not all hotels are created equal, no question. But we typically, I would say, we're typically able to get, you know, a Category 4 hotel on a yearly basis that's going for somewhere between, you know, $150 and $300 a night. So if you think about it in terms of that, well, now what you're saying is, okay, I'm paying $95 a year for this card, and if I put $15,000 in normal spending on the card, I'm going to earn two nights at those level properties that we just mentioned. And I would say I'd be hard-pressed to think you couldn't get $95 in value out of it. And I'd argue you could probably get closer to $400 or $500 in value out of those free nights if you put $15,000 on the card each year. And I think that's the value prop for families.
Absolutely, yeah. And just to give, if you're not familiar with Hyatt, a few of my favorite Category 4 hotels are Hyatt Hill Country near San Antonio, Great Lazy River Water Park, really, really fun for a long weekend family getaway. The Hyatt Andaz in Costa Rica, we've been 2 years running now, both with and without kids, and it can sell for $300 to $500 during peak season. So being able to use one of those Category 1 through 4 awards is really, really tremendous. And then there's the Hyatt Coconut Point in Florida, which we have not been to yet, but it's on our radar for this fall. And they have a fantastic looking, humongous, recently renovated water park. So, you know, using it there doesn't get you just a place to sleep at night, but it's going to get you basically a private water park just for hotel guests. So those are some of the ways we like to use those awards. And I did double check. Explorist level elite status in Hyatt is 30 nights a year. So if you put 15 grand on the Hyatt card, you're at 11 right there, which still leaves you 19 to go, which may or may not be realistic for your family. But if it is, that's a way you can hit that elite status tier easier than without the Hyatt card.
Yeah, you got to it before I did, because I was just going to say that I had just confirmed it myself. But you brought up Coconut Point, which my family did stay at before they expanded the water park. And I would say, just based on the quality of the rooms, a really fabulous lounge breakfast. I'll go ahead and link to the post in the show notes so you guys can see what I saw. The water park at the hotel, plus there's also Hyatt's version of a timeshare product, the Hyatt Residences, that's next door, that has two additional pools and a lazy river. So there's a lot to do there. And those are the sorts of things for as a family where you can get you know, tons of value out of those free nights. So when you think about these cards, you know, there's absolutely bonus categories here. We'll touch on those briefly. You can earn 4 points per dollar on your spending at Hyatt properties. Interestingly enough, they've got 2 points per dollar at fitness clubs and memberships at fitness clubs or gyms, which is something of a new category in the points and miles bonus world. And then 2 points per dollar on restaurants, airline tickets, and then buses/Uber, Lyft, things like that. And while families can earn some bonus opportunities there, some extra points on typical spending, I think the big thing here, if you're going to carry this card in your wallet, is you're pre-planning to stay at two Hyatt properties over the course of a year if you spend $15,000, or you're marrying up those two nights. And you're spending two nights at, say, as Hummer said, the Andaz Costa Rica or the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point, and you've got to be able to get a lot more than $95 in value out of those two nights, and that's where you can save a bunch of money with a card like this in your wallet if you're trying to do family travel cheaper.
Yeah, and then, you know, we can't skip the sign-up bonus, because this is a huge thing about this card too.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, the Hyatt card gave you two nights you could use at any Hyatt. That's been gone for over a year, but that was really, really awesome if you targeted high-end properties. Then they changed it to a 40,000 point sign-up bonus, which was not bad, but it wasn't nearly as cool for those of us who go some of those higher tier properties. But now when they launched this new world of Hyatt card, they gave you kind of the best of both worlds, because you have points that you can use however you want. and you have 60,000 of them, which is enough to book two nights at even their top tier properties if you wanted to, but you're not locked into just two nights. Their award chart starts at just 5,000 points a night. And these are for hotels that you actually might really want to stay in. They're not just some crummy airport hotel. We visit family in Wichita, Kansas, and you may not. But to give you an example, you can stay in the Hyatt Regency Wichita, which is a full-service, real, actual, nice hotel. But it's Category 1, so it's just 5,000 Hyatt points a night. They have one in Albuquerque, Tulsa. I mean, there's some of those cities that aren't your hotbeds, but maybe you're visiting family or you have work there. And some of the Category 1 Hyatts there are actually surprisingly nice. But if we're talking vacation, most of the vacation properties that I like in the Hyatt world start at 12,000 points. There's more of them once you get to 15,000, which is that Category 4 we were hitting on earlier.
Right.
And then, you know, you've got places like Grand Hyatt Kauai, for example, which is just outstanding. And it's 25,000 Hyatt points a night. And it sells for $500 easy in the summer. If you want to stretch your points a little further, the Hyatt Regency Maui is just as nice, really, as the Grand Hyatt Kauai. It's just a little bit different and a little bit busier of an area. And it's 20,000 points a night. So if you got these 60,000 bonus points on the card after you spend, it's kind of a two-tiered bonus, but you'll get them all if you can spend $6,000 within 6 months, which is just $1,000 average a month. Then you could have enough for three nights at the Hyatt Regency Maui Resort. So, you know, that's easily probably $1,000 worth of travel that you can get by getting this card, putting $6,000 on it in 6 months and paying that $95 annual fee. So like Ed said, it's not free travel, but it's a heck of a deal.
Well, it is. It's almost like buying into your own little mini, you know, timeshare, if you will, because you can move these points around anywhere. We, you know, we mentioned the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point earlier, and that property is 15,000 points a night. So, you know, your 60,000 point sign up bonus, if you hit the second target of spending, the $6,000, that gets you four nights for the sign up bonus, and then, you know, as we said, you get the Category 1 to 4 free night upon renewal. And then if you spend $15,000, you get another one. So in theory, you could stack all that up and that one sign-up bonus plus paying the annual fee a second time. So now you're in for $190. Could get you a six-night vacation. So that's essentially your spring break trip to a, you know, a very beautiful hotel in Florida with a free water park on site. And, you know, I like to... I like to use a phrase that I certainly wasn't the one that came up with this, but your buddy and mine, Rick Ingersoll, who used to write The Frugal Travel Guy, used to say, if it's good enough to do for you, it's good enough to do for your whole family. And in this instance, you'd say, well, you know, if you're a family with good credit and you can be responsible and pay off the card at the end of the month, why not have both you and your spouse get the card? And then you've got double these number of benefits, number of free nights, you know, number of free points to use to help plan vacations.
Yeah. And one other option I want to throw out there that we haven't mentioned, we've been focusing on hot weather destinations. But if your family likes to ski like mine does, one other Hyatt property to keep in mind is the Hyatt Place Keystone in Colorado. It's also a Category 4. So you can use those Category 1 through 4 awards, or you can use 15,000 points a night. And when you stay there, you're not only super, super close to the base of Keystone, but you also get free lift tickets for kids, I believe 12 and under, just by staying there, even if you're using points. So we did this for a really quick ski trip in March earlier this year, and I absolutely want to go back. Keystone's a really family-friendly mountain, and if you're staying on points or award certificates and then you're getting your kids' lift tickets free, all of a sudden that ski trip costs just a fraction of what you think it might.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the I didn't know about the lift tickets, which I think is a great value. And if you are a cold weather destination sort of person, it's not just the Keystone. You've also got the Park City, Utah stuff. The Hyatt Centric Park City is another great option, which is 20,000 points a night. And then if and that's ski in, ski out access for just a little less convenience right down the bottom of the hill, maybe a 5-minute drive. There's also a Hyatt Place in Park City that's 15,000 points a night for you snowbirds that want a place to stay for free.
And then if you want to go all in baller style, you can stay at the Park Hyatt Beaver Creek, which is a stone's throw from not only the main lifts at the base of the mountain, but also ski school. So there's no like massive long distance hauling of ski gear and grumpy children to and from ski school. It is right next to it. So it's top tier, 30,000 points a night. So it would eat up through your Hyatt account balance pretty quickly. But if you're looking for super, super convenient location, it can't be beat.
Yeah, I agree. And I think moral of the story and what we're going to try and fold into these 101 segments is the focus for families, if you will, to try and figure out how to maximize these credit cards or maximize a special promotion with various airlines and hotels that are out there. And for the way that Hyatt has packaged this relaunch, I think Summer and I would both agree, a lot of value here for families to be considering. You know, you might want to start with where you're trying to plan a vacation to and work your way backwards from that. But suffice it to say that I think it'd be awful hard-pressed not to be able to get $100, way more than $100 in value out of the sign-up bonus plus the free nights on the new World of Hyatt credit card.
Oh, totally. And then a final word, just if you already have the old Hyatt credit card, they are offering, I think, 2,000 points to upgrade, which may make sense for you. I think in my family, we are going to look at breaking up with our old Hyatt card, waiting a hot minute, and then applying for the new one fresh, because I would vastly prefer 60,000 points to get a new account than just 2,000 to upgrade my existing account. But obviously, you know, look at your own situation and take into account how many new accounts you have and all before deciding what makes sense for you.
Yeah, I think I might end up being lazy and upgrading mine, but we'll see. Certainly that's, use your own judgment on which way you want to go with it, but definitely something for families to consider. Before we run out of time, Summer, tell folks where they can find you when you're not jawing with me on the podcast.
Totally. You can find me blogging just about every day on mommypoints.com, MOMMY points. And I'm on Twitter at mommypoints.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed the segment. We'll be right back. We've still got some more stuff to cover in the episode, including a sneak preview of Disney's Toy Story Land. Talk to you soon. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you know the places miles and points can take you. Maybe you've been saving up those miles and points to plan that special once-in-a-lifetime trip, but you can't find what you're looking for. The experts at BookYourReward.com have redeemed over 3 billion miles. That's billion, with a B. You won't find anyone with more experience to book your dream vacation. BookYourReward.com will provide you with concierge booking services to get you where you want to go, how you want to get there, and using the rewards program of your choice. All for a lot less than the cost of a domestic coach airline ticket. For listeners of the Miles to Go podcast, with a special limited time offer, receive a $25 Amazon gift card with your first paid booking at BookYourReward.com. Drop us a line at milestogopodcast@gmail.com with your itinerary for more details. And it's time for another It's a Big Deal segment with my friend Jen from Deals We Like. We've got a pretty awesome deal queued up here, and unfortunately it's not one that I can take advantage of, and I'm sure Jen's going to give me some trouble about that. Hey, Jen, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Ed. How are you today?
I'm good, and I'm super excited hearing about everybody saving a bunch of money on Amazon using their membership rewards. Tell folks a little bit about the deal for starters, and then you can make fun of me.
All right. So Amazon's launching their summer Amazon Prime Day, which they've had for the past few years, and that is off the top of my head on July 16th.
But
in combination with that, they're offering American Express membership reward card holders the opportunity to get 20% off their purchase. So anytime between now, or actually a few days ago when the promotion started, up until they actually pull it. So there isn't a expiration date on this, but it will most likely go through Amazon Prime Day, I'd assume. And you can essentially save up to $100 on your purchase by just using at least one membership reward point towards your purchase. So of course they would prefer you to use more points, but the kind of loophole there is you only really have to use one point and you'll save 20%. It's an awesome promotion.
Yeah, and a couple of keys here for folks. One is, you know, I wouldn't, as Jen said, I wouldn't use membership rewards points for the whole purchase because you're not getting great value for those points, but you only have to use one. And the other thing, too, is, you know, some folks may say, well, gosh, you know, I don't have $500 in Amazon purchases to make right now, but the offer does appear to be working with gift cards. So that's another way that you can, you know, quickly get to that $100 discount, you know, just by buying $500 worth of gift cards that you could use in the future.
Absolutely. So originally when the promotion launched, you were able to purchase Amazon gift cards. They, about a day or two later after the promotion launch, they closed that loophole, but you can still purchase third-party gift cards. So there's a whole slew of gift cards, but some popular ones, you know, in the travel world are Southwest, Airbnb, and then you can even, you know, Lyft, Whole Foods. There's a whole slew of them. So there's definitely a gift card out there for pretty much anyone. As long as you shop somewhere, there's a gift card for you. So you can go ahead, purchase a $500 gift card, apply one membership reward point, which is worth a penny, and you'll get $100 off, which is awesome. And then you have this gift card that, you know, typically they don't expire. You can use it anywhere.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. And the only downside to it is the part that you'll ridicule me on, which is I don't actually have a card in my wallet that earned membership rewards points, so I can't get the discount.
I know, Ed. You really you gotta expand that wallet a little bit.
It's pretty bulging as it is, but you're right. It is a conspicuous thing missing from my wallet. I was a membership rewards guy for years and years and years, and then just moved away in the days of the Starwood Amex, and then ultimately on to Ultimate Rewards, and I haven't gone back yet.
Right. So I've had readers say it's not working with my Starwood American Express, and this is just, you know, for those out there, it's not just any American Express. It's right. One that earns you membership reward points, like the American Express Everyday, the Platinum cards, ones that are not tied to a specific hotel or airline chain. So that's something to note. And you just need to make sure to link up, you know, in your Amazon account, link up your American Express card with your account.
Yep, that's the deal, and we think it's probably going to go through Prime Day, July 16th and 17th. We're not 100% sure because of the terms and conditions, but we'll certainly hope for that. Jen, before we run out, let folks know where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me talking about deals.
Sure, you can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com, also via social media on Twitter and Facebook, and really anything that's at Deals We Like. And feel free to email me or comment and catch me on the web, and I'll respond to any questions you have.
Great. Thanks, Jen. We'll talk to you soon.
This episode of Miles to Go is sponsored by GoGo In-Flight Internet. GoGo brings the internet to the sky, so planes fly smarter, airlines perform better, and passengers travel happier. Their new blazing fast 2KU antenna delivers industry-leading speeds, up to 15 megabits per passenger device, and is currently available on over 400 planes flying in over 65 countries worldwide. Get GoGo, travel happier.
Welcome back. This is your host, Ed Pizza, on Miles to Go. And today I've got my first segment with two folks because both of them were down at one of my favorite places, Disney World, at the same time. I've got Leslie from Trips with Tykes, and I've got Joe Chung on, who's of Disney Deciphered fame, Traveling Dad fame. Where else from, Joe?
As Joe Flies, Save Rossi Observation Deck podcasts. I'm kind of like, you know, all over the place, but, you know, just only mediocre at all of it.
I can't keep track of them all. I really can't. It's like I need a manual to get started. Hey, Leslie, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ed. Glad to be on.
Yeah, so you guys were lucky enough to sneak into Toy Story Land down at Disney World, sort of before it opened, and then also experience it right after it opened. And I'm both jealous and not at the same time because I heard about some of the waits. But, you know, for folks who haven't been paying attention, Hollywood Studios down at Disney World is going through a bit of a renaissance. They're adding both a full-ish Toy Story Land, and they're also adding a Star Wars Land. And Toy Story Land opened up, just a week or so ago by the time this episode will go live. And it opened up to, I would say, mostly positive reviews, or a couple of mixed comments I heard. But it sounds like you guys had a good time overall. Is that a fair assessment, Leslie?
Yeah, we had a great time. Just for full disclosure, we were guests of Disney for this press preview. Always have to stick that in there. But so, of course, they do show us a good time under those circumstances. But we try to maintain our editorial independence, and we get to tour the land in the couple of days before it opened to the press and really get to look at the details. And it's very well done. Joe and I have both been to Toy Story Land in Hong Kong Disneyland. And of course, there's one now in Shanghai and one in the second Paris park. But I think this is new levels of detail and more original attractions than some of those other lands have. So it was definitely a step up from Hong Kong for sure.
Yeah, I did the Disneyland Paris version. And so my biggest problem, if you will, where I made my first mistake sort of in assuming what was going on, and I think this will be a good segue to you guys giving some perspective here, is I rode the Slinky Dog ride at Disneyland Paris. I was like, all right, it's kind of fine. It's like this little wormy thing that goes around in a circle. And I heard on opening day that Slinky Dog Dash at Toy Story Land had a 5 to 6 hour wait. And I'm thinking, like, who the heck would wait in line for that? And then I come to find out that I was just completely misguided, and that Slinky Dog is a really smooth roller coaster, sort of on the lines along the lines of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. You know, what did you guys think of Slinky Dog?
So Slinky Dog is definitely a totally different attraction than what you experienced and what Hong Kong has as well. I mean, it is an original coaster. There's nothing like it at any other Disney park. The technology is very well done. So it is a really smooth ride. Yeah, I think it's probably closest to Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. It's probably also similar, say, to maybe Big Thunder Mountain in terms of thrills. But yeah, there's a lot of, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who wants to, you know, ride it with a clean mind, but there are a couple of little twists and turns in there that you might not be expecting. And it's very well done. And I think that definitely got rave reviews across the board from everybody I saw. That is the highlight of the land. I can't say I'll wait 300 minutes for it like people did on opening day, but you know, I'd certainly wait an hour or so to get to experience something like that or grab a fast pass.
Yeah, and it's down to 90. I mean, it's only been like 5 days. It's down to 90 minutes on the like boards, but I think in reality, people are waiting closer to 60 minutes. So I think that number is already down. And I would just definitely like personally, I feel like Seven Dwarfs Mine Train waits can be up to like 120 minutes, like regularly. And I don't think Slinky Dog Dash is going to have that long of a wait. And in my opinion, I enjoyed Slinky Dog Dash more than I do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. You know, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train has that really cool section in the middle where you go through the dwarf mine and they're singing. But besides that, you know, I feel like Slinky Dog comes out on top for me.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any ride that's worth waiting 5 or 6 hours for in the free world. I start to have this concern around the 60 to 90 minute range, because I do, you know, using Pandora as an example, I'd love to see the standby queue for that ride, but I don't really want to wait an hour or an hour and a half if I can get a fast pass. And I think here, if you think about Hollywood Studios, I would tend to agree that the lines probably will be shorter, just because there's not quite as much to do in that park. And I think, you know, Magic Kingdom obviously gets more direct attention. I think where we'll see the lines drop even further, and you guys mentioned this as a brief aside for our listeners, we'll link to this in the show notes, but Joe and Leslie have already recorded 2 podcast episodes on their Disney Deciphered podcast with their breakdown of their visit. And one of the things you guys noted was that you felt like Aliens Swirling Saucers, one of the other new rides in Toy Story Land, is something that the wait would probably drop on fairly quickly. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's one of those rides. It's solid and the theming is cute, but it's not something that you probably will feel compelled to ride again and again. Alien Swirling Saucers, for those of you who haven't read all the details, it's sort of people are calling it a teacup ride, but it doesn't spin around like teacups. It moves in a figure eight motion and kind of flings you outward. And if you've ridden Mater's Junkyard Jamboree in Disneyland, it's pretty much the exact same ride design and ride track. And that ride in Disneyland usually maxes out at like 30-minute waits most of the time during regular crowd levels. So I suspect that Alien Swirling Saucers will kind of end up in that same zone once the dust settles.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't know a lot about the ride, and I watched I saw a brief shot of it and assumed, you know, without even seeing it in motion, that it was very much like a scrambler. And then you or Joe, I don't remember which one of you was, actually said that in your episode. And you also tied it back to the Mater ride in California, which I know, but overall you guys liked the level of excitement in that ride. Is that fair to say, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really cool about it is the soundtrack's really good, and there's a lot of good visual effects. You know, there's like ostensibly you are kind of being jostled around inside the claw, like the claw is like hanging from the top. And, you know, I guess the quote unquote story of the ride is that you're trying to avoid getting like grabbed by it. Although that doesn't make sense since the aliens want to get grabbed by it. But, you know, in the end, it's, you know, just a pretty standard ride where you're spinning around a lot. And Leslie, I don't know if you experience this, but I have a friend, Rachel Berkey, actually, Award Travel 101 moderator. She's there like right now, like this instant. And she said it felt bumpier than Mater's. I don't know how you feel about that since you're on Mater's a lot.
It felt pretty identical to me. I felt like the seats were a little more comfortable, maybe in Disney World on Aliens, but just because the ride vehicles were slightly shaped differently. But the speed and the bumpiness of the ride felt identical to me. But I need to ride them in closer succession to be sure.
And the soundtrack is really cute. It's, you know, at least when I was riding, it was like You've Got a Friend in Me, super fast techno chipmunk version or something like that.
Well, it sounds like we got another excuse to go to both Disney World and Disneyland to compare the two rides. You know, it's one of the things I would say that I would compare Aliens and the Mater ride in California on was something else you guys commented on, which is a big pet peeve of mine because I'm not a big sun worshiper. You know, the Mater ride is outdoors in California, but you don't see quite the scorching temperatures as long as extended as you do in Florida. And it sounded like if there was a drawback to Toy Story Land, it's sort of that overall exposure to the sun.
Absolutely. The heat was really a negative. I mean, I have to question Disney a little bit opening a new land with no AC and very little covering at the very end of June. That was, I do wonder whether they missed their target opening date and intended for it to open earlier and bring press in earlier, because we really felt it. We all did. And some of the queues are partially shaded, but not all of them. So as lines get longer, you end up finding yourself in the sun. But we really did feel it. And we were always looking for reasons to escape to like the Toy Story Land bathrooms that had AC, or One Man's Dream just outside of the entrance that has AC. So people will definitely feel it. It's not a place you want to be staying in, you know, July and August for hour after hour.
Yeah, and Disney has kind of tried to combat that by, I think they put up umbrellas like all over the place. They had some up for the media event because they had like standing tables for us to eat food at. But I think they've left them up so that people could have shade. But, you know, that's great to have shade, but then it does kind of take away from the overall feel of the land. Like, I get why they left it wide open, because, you know, it's ostensibly Andy's backyard, but also, you know, leaving it wide open gives you a chance to have the visual effect of being able to see everything, but it is incredibly hot. And the other thing that, you know, I didn't realize until after Leslie and I recorded, but they didn't create any indoor spaces for character meet and greets. So you can meet Buzz and Jesse and Woody, you know, at various times, but, you know, those queues are outside and very hot and sunny as well. So, you know, that can be pretty brutal. And I feel bad for the characters too.
Did they get rid of the character meet and greet that used to be across from the entrance to Toy Story Midway Mania?
I'm still seeing it there in the app. I've been checking it daily to see if they move, because that's where Buzz and Woody are. And so far, I've still seen them there every day. So it'll be, I wonder if they'll keep them there for the summer and then move them into the land. But yeah, I haven't seen a lot of definitive reports. And I did talk to a cast member who told me that the plans for character meet and greets were very much in flux. They were going to be watching crowd levels and seeing where people aggregated. And, you know, I think that could be a real moving target in the coming months.
Yeah, it's possible that, you know, the current character meet and greets at Toy Story Land is just, you know, to help allay the crowd so that people don't have to wait only for the three rides. You know, so it's possible that's all that's up in the air and subject to change.
Yeah, I also noticed, you know, or as I recall, when you guys were talking about umbrellas, I think that's the way that they managed the queue at Toy Story Midway Mania, or maybe just Toy Story Mania in California, at Disneyland, you know, umbrellas to create shading. I do think it's a bit of a miss to not have more of a sun control or misting or something in that line, knowing the sort of weights I would expect at places like Slinky Dog.
Yeah, agreed. There's just some missed opportunities there. And Joe says he wants a splash pad. He wanted a sprinkler that kids could run through. That would have been the ultimate addition to Andy's backyard.
I mean, seriously, they could just like literally put a sprinkler down anywhere, like the one that, you know, you have for your lawn and your kids. And I'm sure nobody would complain.
Well, they've got that. They've got that the sort of the circus thing outside of Barnstormer in Magic Kingdom. That's not a bad excursion for the kids. It's a nice distraction.
Yeah, and it doesn't even take up that much space. So anyway.
No, it doesn't. Lastly, let's close with food. It sounded like you guys tried out, is it Woody's Lunchbox is the food option there in Toy Story Land?
Yes, Woody's Lunchbox.
What did you guys think?
So I had pretty mixed reviews about it. There were some real hits. I really love the tachos, which are tater tot nachos. And those are like chili and sour cream and cheese on top of tater tots and Fritos too. So, you know, just in case you don't have enough artery clogging caloric options, those were great. I tried the grilled cheese sandwich, which I had high hopes for because my kids are super picky eaters and that's one of the two kids' meal choices. And it was too unique of a grilled cheese sandwich for their palates. They would definitely not eat it. So that was a miss for me. We didn't get to try a lot of the breakfast options. It looks like the s'mores French toast sandwich is the one that everybody's talking about. And I did not get to try that, but that sounds equally caloric and artery clogging, but delicious too.
I love caloric and artery clogging. I mean, I am the donut guy, and this is not to take anything away from your love of tater tots, but I've got to imagine that if it's, you know, 98 degrees and 300% humidity, I'm not going to want to devour that plate.
No comment on whether I did or did not devour that plate in such weather.
That's true. You guys did have that real world experience. All right. Well, we'll leave that unknown for a future segment. Before we run away, why don't you guys tell folks where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me? And since we'll be nice and respectful, Joe, why don't we let Leslie go first?
Sure. So I write the blog Trips with Tykes. That's T-Y-K-E-S. So you can find me at tripswithtykes.com. I'm at Trips with Tykes on all forms of social media. And of course, Joe and I co-host Disney's Deciphered. You can find us at DisneyDeciphered.com, and where fine podcasts are sold.
Yep. And you can find me writing asajoeflies.com and on social media at asajoeflies everywhere on Disney Deciphered, as Leslie said. And also I have another Miles and Points podcast with Trevor from Tagging Miles at the Save Rossi Observation Deck. And look for a special guest, Ed Pizzarello, in the near future.
Oh, that's right. We do have to record that. Yeah, and I will say, folks, if you are a Twitter active user like I am, both Leslie and Joe are fun follows on Twitter. I definitely enjoy the back and forth banter with both of them. I'm really glad to have you guys both on for a very early look at Toy Story Land. I'll look forward to getting on there myself, but I can't wait to have you guys back on the podcast. Thanks again for the time today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ed.
Last thing, go at night. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look great at night. All right, well, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
Wrapping up this week's episode, we covered a lot of ground. Summer was back with us to talk about the World of Hyatt credit card, which I love. I'll definitely be upgrading to that. I think it's a card that can fit in a lot of wallets right now for a great way to get ahead with travel. Jen from Deals We Like was back to help us figure out how to save a whopping $100 from Amazon. Pretty easy. And Joe and Leslie were able to walk us through Toy Story Land at Disney World. And for a fanatic like me, I can't wait to bring my kids back down there to try out the new Toy Story Land rides, especially Slinky Dog. The final two pennies this week is about my friend Vicky, who reached out to me a few days ago because she's trying to plan a trip to Hawaii for her family, and she's trying to go during Christmas. Vicky's a new card member of the Chase Ultimate Reward cards and has amassed a bunch of points from spending with her business. Great lesson about business, small business owners, and how to earn tons of points. She's already got enough points for two free tickets during the peak redemption period of Christmas to Hawaii, and she was trying to figure out if it was a good value. And I think the lesson that she was able to take away, and I love that she picked up on this so quickly, is not necessarily that she should or shouldn't go to Hawaii, but we talk through how much tickets to Hawaii normally cost in dollars and how much the award tickets were this time of year. And like I said, it wasn't a bad value for her United miles, which is where we'd be transferring them in this specific example. But then she said, I want to use these points to take my kids somewhere warm and somewhere exciting. And so we started talking about other places. We talked about Costa Rica and the awesome Andaz Papagayo down there. We talked about the fact that since she lives near me in Virginia by Washington Dulles Airport, that Copa has a nonstop flight to Panama, another warm, lush, you know, somewhat tropical destination with, you know, the canal and other activities there and, you know, a few mosquitoes that are big enough for you to ride. Moral of the story here was that Vicky took a trip to Hawaii, which was what was on her mind, and started transforming it into, hey, here's five or six other warm, tropical places that I can go that might be exciting for my family. And I love hearing that from folks because it helps make the connection that you're not just focused on one thing. When you're redeeming miles and points, flexibility is the most important thing. And if you say, I want to go to Hawaii and I want to leave on December 25th and I want to come back on January 2nd, well, you're hitting at the peak when everybody wants to go, and you're not really giving yourself any flexibility. You've got one destination, you've got one set of dates. And when we're dealing with travel at Christmas time during the holidays, it's really important to have flexibility where you can. And so knowing that we have kids that are school age and that the dates aren't going to be very flexible, being able to look at a handful of different destinations is a big key to making the most out of your miles or points or even finding cheap tickets to places. I hope Vicky ends up with a great trip for her family, but she definitely took away the lesson of trying to be a little bit more flexible to get the most value for those points. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. Like I said, a lot of fun putting this one together. Look for a debut of a new podcast next week on Boarding Area. We're going to call it Now Boarding. Should be a lot of fun to get that one launched as well, so you can hear me in two places on a weekly basis. Until then, if you're enjoying this podcast, I hope you'll take time to subscribe. That way we can send you every episode when it comes out every week on Wednesday. And also to rate the podcast. Those subscriptions and ratings help make the podcast visible to more listeners, and we definitely want to grow our audience. So that's what you can do to help us. We're already working on next week's episode, including a cool segment with Gilbert from God Save the Points on how to save money on airline tickets via a new method that even I wasn't fully up on. So there's always new stuff to learn. We'll make sure to put together another great episode for you guys to listen to next week. Until then, we've got miles to go.